What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting the U.S. plans to take in more refugees. The United States pledged Wednesday to accept more refugees around the world, including from Syria. Secretary of State John Kerry says the U.S. is looking hard at the number that can be managed with respect to the intensifying migrant crisis in Europe. John Kirby is the U.S. spokesman.
Resettlement is only one option, and it oftentimes isn't always the best option. Many of these people want to go back home. That's why we've so much of the money, and we are the largest donor with respect to these issues around the world, but certainly with respect to the Syrian crisis, you know, over $4 billion. But it's being applied to the refugee situation there in the region, particularly trying to help countries like Jordan and Turkey, who are dealing with really the brunt of it there.
Meanwhile, European Commission Chief Jean-Claude Juncker Wednesday called for European Union member states to take in thousands more refugees and migrants over the next 2 years in a quota system. That proposal, which is to be discussed at a special EU meeting in Brussels Monday, is opposed by some governments, including the Czech Republic and Slovakia. The West African country of Guinea has ended its first week with no new cases of Ebola, the first time that's occurred since March 2014. The World Health Organization's Bruce Aylward says the goal is zero transmission in the human population. That remains possible, he said, in 2015.
But remember, for many countries, they're thinking, or ministries or health facilities, is like, oh, we hit zero. Let's go do all the other things that we haven't been doing. So phase three is really all about how to prioritize those things and make sure they don't get dropped and that any residual risk is managed.
Meanwhile, Sierra Leone confirmed at least three new cases of Ebola this week in a northern village following the death of a 67-year-old woman in late August. This is VOA News. Islamist rebels have reportedly captured a major airbase from government forces in Syria's northwest Idlib province, expelling all of President Bashar al-Assad's military. Wednesday's report is the latest in a series of setbacks in recent months in the nearly five-year conflict, which has claimed more than a quarter million lives and forced millions out of the country. Meanwhile, Russia's foreign ministry confirmed for the first time Wednesday Russian military experts are in Syria. A spokesperson said the aid was intended to combat the unprecedented rise of terror threats in Syria and Iraq. That concerns NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, who spoke Wednesday in Prague.
That will not contribute to solve the conflict. I think it's important to now support all efforts to find a political solution to the conflict in Syria, and we support very much the efforts by the UN to try to find a political solution to the conflict in Syria.
In Washington Wednesday, a U.S. spokesman warned that a greater Russian military presence in Syria could lead to greater violence and instability. Thousands of Americans gathered outside the U.S. Capitol building Wednesday in Washington to oppose the nuclear agreement with Iran that lawmakers are set to vote on later this month. Among the speakers, Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican presidential hopeful.
This Iranian nuclear deal is catastrophic. It is the single greatest national security threat facing America.
On Tuesday, three more Democratic senators came out in favor of the agreement. At least 42 now support the deal. That's enough to prevent a disapproval resolution from being passed in the Senate. Meanwhile, Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said Wednesday any future talks with Washington will only deal with issues related to the nuclear deal reached with world powers, not any other areas. VOA reports that Islamic State militants are running private prisons in three areas of Achin district of Afghanistan. Achin is one of the several districts in the eastern Nangarhar province that saw fierce fighting between IS and local Taliban. The Achin governor says the majority of people being held in prisons are Afghan officials. Last month, a video revealed several people being blown up with explosives by IS in the province. Sierra Leone Supreme Court says President Ernest Bai Koroma had the authority to fire his vice president. The court, in a unanimous ruling, said Wednesday since Samuel Sam Sumana did not belong to the same party, Mr. Koroma was cleared to remove him. Sam Sumana was dismissed after being expelled from the ruling All People's Congress in March, accused of fomenting unrest, a charge he denies. The United States and Benin have signed a $375 million agreement to invest in the country's electric power sector, a five-year Millennium Challenge Corporation compact. The deal will fund electricity distribution, off-grid access, oversight, and policy reform. The U.S. Foreign Aid Agency expects nearly 10 million people to benefit. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military hoist a flag over a key border town recaptured recently from Boko Haram.
Today is very, very significant, not to only to the Nigerian military, but to the Nigerian people and the peace-loving people all over the world.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman, a spokesman for the Nigerian military. Ivory Coast announces candidates for its October 25th election, but former President Babo's party says the poll will not take place. Sierra Leone Supreme Court says President Koroma was constitutionally justified to sack his vice president. And Sudan denies a rape and torture report by Human Rights Watch.
So there is some lady, you don't know her, you don't know her name exactly, you don't know her ID. She said that she has been raped, and you believe her. This, is, I think, makes the credibility of Human Rights Watch somehow is not credible.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. The UN launches a low-cost pollution monitoring to help poor cities and human rights. The human rights of migrants and refugees will top Monday's UN Human Rights Council's agenda. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's army has hoisted the country's flag in Gamboru, Ngala, a border town with neighboring Cameroon, days after recapturing it from the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. The militants had used the town as a stronghold to launch attacks in both Nigeria and Cameroon. Nigeria's Army Chief of Staff, Major General Turku Yusuf Boratai, was in Gamboru, Ngala on Wednesday to boost the morale of soldiers on the front lines of the fight against Boko Haram. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman tells reporter Peter Clotty that the soldiers also received supplies, including food and ammunition.
Today is very, very significant, not to only to the Nigerian military, but to the Nigerian people and the peace-loving people all over the world, because we are able to restore dignity and the territorial integrity of our dear country, Nigeria, by hoisting the flag, first by capturing it from the clutches of Boko Haram terrorists, and now we are taking full control of the town and hoisted our flag.
So Boko Haram used to control that part of the land between Cameroon and Nigeria. Is that the case?
Exactly. Since the advent of the Boko Haram insurgency, you know, they captured the town and they killed most of the inhabitants of the town, and some of them have gone either as refugees or internally displaced persons within the country. And just last week, the Nigerian troops were able to capture the town from the Boko Haram terrorists.
How are the residents now responding to such a ceremony after hoisting the flag of Nigeria in the town?
I wish the residents are here, but the good neighborliness between Nigeria and Cameroon, across the river, just across the bridge, the inhabitants of Portoko, they were so happy, they were so pleased, they were cheering the chief of army staff and members of the entourage. Unfortunately, Peter, I must tell you the level of destruction in Gamboru, Ngala by Boko Haram terrorists is unprecedented. It's unprecedented. Almost all the structures have been destroyed, and you can't even get a single soul. And remember, this is a very big town that is very strategic and the economic power, too.
So Boko Haram used to use that part of the country to launch attack in neighboring Cameroon.
Exactly. You know, Gamboru Ngala is a border town that is noted for economic activities. And more so, there is a trade route that goes from Nigeria to Cameroon up to Central African Republic.
So now that you've hoisted the Nigerian flag, you are there with the Chief of Army Staff. What happens next?
We came to, resupply the troops, be with them, boost their morale, and, show them the appreciation of the Nigerian people, the president and commander-in-chief, for doing us proud by capturing this strategic plan from the Boko Haram terrorists. So we are going to be with them. We are going to rejoice with them. We are going to have a wonderful time, even though we'll be security conscious before we go back to other formation and possibly back to Maiduguri and then Abuja, because there are other commitments for the Chief of Army Staff too.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osman is the spokesman for the Nigerian military. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from Gamboru, Ngala, near the border with Cameroon. In Ivory Coast, the party of former President Laurent Gbagbo says it will make sure that the coming October 25th elections are not held. Boubacar Kone, interim spokesman of the Ivorian Popular Front Party, says the people of Cote d'Ivoire have already begun organizing protests against the vote, which is seen by many as crucial to return the country to stability since the violence that followed the 2010 presidential vote. This came after the Constitutional Council Wednesday released the names of 10 candidates, including President Alassane Ouattara, who will compete in the October election. Kone says the process is invalid because President Ouattara is not eligible to stand for a second term according to the country's constitution.
What I can say is that this process is very badly started since Mr. Ouattara is not eligible according to our constitution. Second of all, our electoral commission is imbalanced and biased, which means the process is definitely imbalanced and unfair. Third thing, you know, the national reconciliation process is boycotted by this process in the sense that more than 700 political opponents are still in prison, in jail, for strange reasons, all but illegal. We have more than 50,000 of our compatriots abroad in exile. And this environment revolves into a very violent environment because Mr. Ouattara's people are armed and they are threatening peace all over the country.
You mentioned that you think your party believes that President Alassane Ouattara is not eligible to run. What do you mean?
If you read the constitution, and this was done in the year 2000, his candidacy was rejected according to the Supreme Court, and nothing has changed in the law. He became candidate exceptionally in 2010 in the process of reconciliation for only one term. He was allowed by President Gbagbo under the guidance of President Mbeki, who was mediator in our crisis. But this term is ended now. It was only for one term. We are back to the normal law, and the normal law says he's not eligible.
What do you make of the fact that there are 10 opposition candidates? This is a far conclusion that perhaps they are going to hand the election to President Ouattara.
Yes, there are a certain number of opponents, but not all of them are opponents. Mr. Afi Nguessan, for example, is not an opponent.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, some candidates are there to accompany President Ouattara. They are there to distort the electoral process. They know they are not competing to be elected.
Well, that's what some people say, that former President Gbagbo's party is the party that can challenge Mr. Ouattara. But you say you're not going to take part in the election.
We're not going to part in the election, and I believe the election is not going to take place.
Why?
No, because the whole process is not going to stand.
But the process has started. The elections are in October.
Yeah, but the people of Cote d'Ivoire are going to protest. Protests are being organized all over the country against the election.
Boubacar Kone is interim spokesman of the opposition Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo. He was speaking with me from Abidjan. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Thursday, September 10th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Sierra Leone's Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday that President Ernest Bai Koroma has the constitutional powers to sack his elected vice president, Alhaji Sam Sumana. But as Kelvin Lewis reports from Freetown, the opposition says they will now use the political option.
Some 6 months ago, President Koroma issued a press release announcing that he had relieved Alhaji Samuel Sam Sumana from his position as vice president. The reason given was that Sam Sumana had been expelled from the ruling All People's Congress Party and therefore no longer possessed the continuous requirement to hold the office. Sam Sumana then went to court seeking an interpretation of two questions. The first is whether the president had the powers to remove him from office in a manner other than what is prescribed by the Constitution in sections 50 and 51. The second is whether the supreme executive authority quoted in section 40 of the Constitution includes the power to remove the vice president from office. The five judges in a unanimous decision ruled that the answers to the two questions were yes. The acting Chief Justice Valicious Thomas argued that membership of a political party was part of four qualifications set out in Section 40 of the Constitution for anyone to hold office as vice president. In answering the second question, the acting Chief Justice says the Constitution does not expressly state whether it is Parliament or the President who takes action when the Vice President is removed for not fulfilling one of the qualifications to hold office. He says the Constitution did not envisage this scenario. As a result, he says, Section 41 says the President has supreme executive authority and in such a situation can draw on such powers to act in a situation that the Constitution does not expressly make provision for. He then answered the second question saying, yes, the supreme executive powers given to the president empowers him to remove the vice president from office in a situation where the Constitution does not expressly state who should act. Reacting to the judgment, Secretary General of the opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, Sulaiman Banja Tijansi, says the Supreme Court ruling is unacceptable.
Well, they are saying that the fact that the vice president ceased to be a member of the ruling party, that amounts to a vacancy. That has created a vacancy. Why should the president remove the vice president in office if a vacancy had existed? If a vacancy had existed, there should not have been a press release removing him from office. We are saying categorically that the only way you can remove the vice president from office is according to sections 50 and 51 of the Constitution, and we stand by that and we believe that's right law. And anything to the contrary, we do not believe in and we would not accept. As political parties, I'm sure we would not accept this particular interpretation by the Supreme Court. So we will now have a scenario where the Supreme Court and the executive have chosen a vice president for the people of Sierra Leone, and us, the political parties, relying on the mandate of the people, do not accept that appointment and will not respect that office.
The Attorney General and Minister of Justice, Franklin Baikagbo, says the judgment delivered was fair.
I think the correct interpretation was given to the Constitution by the justices of the Supreme Court, and indeed, there will always be other views. But my position has always been, do not run down our institutions, rather encourage and enhance their efforts. And I think that should be the position of every right-thinking Sierra Leonean at this moment.
After the ruling, a group of supporters of the ruling All People's Congress Party paraded the streets singing celebratory songs. For VOA Africa, I'm Kelvin Lewis reporting from the capital, Freetown.
Sudan has denied its rapid support forces committed mass rape and killings of civilians during two counterinsurgency campaigns in Darfur. In a report released Wednesday, the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch said the abuses appear to be widespread and systematic attacks on civilian populations that may constitute crimes against humanity. The organization said it interviewed 212 victims and witnesses of the Darfur attacks between May 2014 and June 2015, including 151 who had fled to Chad and South Sudan and 16 who were interviewed inside Darfur. Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal said Human Rights Watch is an untrusted organization that is always out to discredit the Khartoum government every time it does something positive, particularly as it tries to stabilize Darfur.
In fact, we consider Human Rights Watch an untrusty organization. We do some progress, then we come out with some allegations. Just because of someone from Arabian Radio said that there is mass rape of 200 in Tabit area, and they said that they have interrogated about 50 women through telephone, and they take it as a matter of fact, this is true. Whereas through telephone, it is not justified. There is some lady, you don't know her, you don't know her name exactly, you don't know her ID, and she said that she has been raped, and you believe her. And you consider this as a document. This is, I think, makes the credibility of Human Rights Watch somehow is not credible. And what I'm telling you, now Sudan is moving good steps in Darfur. So we have good steps of stabilizing in Darfur and peace going on. Now we are moving east. The president visited China. So where we are there in China, I told everybody that just wait 1 or 2 days, Human Rights Watch will lead a campaign against Sudan. And actually, this has happened. We think this is unfair. It is a politicized campaign against Sudan, and we are ready to investigate. There is no mass rape. There is no any sort of insurgency done by militia or done by our army. We have no militia. We have actually disciplined army in Darfur and everywhere in Sudan.
Mr. Minister, Human Rights Watch is saying that it got the information from interviews that it conducted with some defectors from your rapid support unit and the armed forces.
By telephone. Is it fair? Now you make a telephone for somebody and he says to you that I'm so and so and have been raped. And you believe that? You take it as a fact? This is what they have done. If they want to do a real and a fair investigation, they have to come to Sudan. I'm going to give them a chance to go to in Sudan and to go everywhere they like and ask people, not by telephone.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Outdoor air pollution kills 3.7 million people per year around the world, according to the World Health Organization. The key to controlling the problem is knowing where it comes from. But that information is all but absent in much of the developing world. So the United Nations Environment Program is launching a low-cost tool to help officials keep watch over the air in their cities. VOA Steve Baragona has more from Nairobi.
Tabitha Wangeshi suffers from asthma, but with the little money she makes selling charcoal, she can't always afford the medicine to treat it.
My chest is always blocked, like my ribs are dried up. From there, I start breathing heavily. I run out of oxygen, then I start breathing heavily.
Across town at Kenyatta National Hospital, Dr. Ndambuki Mboloi says there is one factor causing breathing problems all over Nairobi.
Air pollution is a big problem within the city.
The city's dirty vehicles and notorious traffic are the leading source of dangerous gases and particles in the air. Mboloi says the toxic haze that shrouds Nairobi raises rates of asthma, heart disease, lung disease, and airway infections.
By judging with the number of patients that we see who present with the respiratory problems, it may be getting worse.
So all over the developing world, cities are growing fast, and with them, the traffic, and with the traffic, the pollution. And we know it's bad, but we don't know how bad it is because no one's been checking.
Experts say there is very little data on air pollution and its consequences in the cities of Africa or much of the developing world. But the UN Environment Program hopes to change that with this little box.
The technology that we are launching today is a way to measure that very accurately and very cheaply.
These little boxes measure all the major air pollutants for about 100 times less than the typical monitor. McGlade says cities can build an effective network of monitors at a price they can afford.
And they're able then to do the apportionment, to find out the source of the pollution, and then act on that.
So policies can target a city's biggest problems, whether it's burning trash or industrial pollution or emissions from dirty vehicles. And the world's rapidly growing cities can have the information they need to control pollution that each year kills millions and harms millions more. Steve Baragona, VOA News, Nairobi.
The human rights of migrants and refugees will top the agenda of the upcoming session of the UN Human Rights Council. The Council's 30th regular session opens this coming Monday and is scheduled to run until October 2nd. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raad Al Hussein, will kick off the 3-week session with an oral update of emerging crises and situations around the world. German Ambassador and President of the Council, Joachim Rucker, says the migrant and refugee situation in Europe and elsewhere will be a major focus of the speech.
The topic of migration and refugees poses a significant challenge for us all, not just the countries of origin, but the countries of transition and the countries of destination. This is a situation we must address by looking also at the root causes of these movements, and human rights are essential in all aspects of this crisis.
Ruka says lack of respect for human rights is very often the root cause behind migration. He says lack of respect for people's civil and political rights or social and economic rights frequently spurs people to flee their countries of origin. The 47-member council will be faced with a very heavy agenda of global rights violations. Human rights experts will present reports on issues such as arbitrary detention and forced disappearances and torture. 30 countries' situations will be highlighted, including investigative reports on the human rights situation in Syria and Ukraine. The council will hold a panel discussion on the human rights of North Korea, with a focus on international abductions of foreigners.
Let's view Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sponsoring here is Mark Olma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin at the All Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. Nigeria beat Ghana 2-0 in men's football, while in the women's game, Ivory Coast pipped the Republic of Congo by a solitary goal as Nigeria overpowered Tanzania 3-0 on Wednesday. In women's basketball, Cameroon outclassed Republic of Congo 98-28. Mali outplayed Mozambique 70-48. Senegal dismissed Gabon 87-26. And Angola beat Algeria 61-51. In the men's game, the Democratic Republic of Congo beat Seychelles 69-43. Meanwhile, Botswana pipped Senegal 3-2 in women's volleyball on Wednesday. Egypt dismissed Ghana 3-0, and Seychelles also dismissed the Democratic Republic of Congo in straight sets. In the men's contest, Egypt outplayed Nigeria 3-1. The Democratic Republic of Congo beat Mozambique in straight sets, while Botswana got a walkover against Gambia. Turning to the British Commonwealth Youth Games in Apia, Samoa. In athletics, South Africa's Gift Leotlela and Nigeria's Idamadu Dupraise Ogenefijeri clinched gold medals in boys and girls 200 meters respectively on Wednesday. Willie Tarbey and Kipyegon Bett secured a 1-2 Kenyan win in 800 meters, as did Davis Kiplagat and Richard Kimunya in 3,000 meters. South Africa bagged more medals through Katleho Tladi and Tylon Build, winners of boys' 110-meter hurdles and girls' 100-meter hurdles respectively, while Werner Fisser and Berger Lambret were silver and bronze medalists in shot put. Kenya's Sheila Chelagat won girls' 3,000 meters, with Ugandan's Peruth Chemutai and Janeth Chemusto placing second and third. Botswana and Nigeria triumphed in boys' and girls' 4x100-meter relays respectively. At the end of the athletics contest at the Commonwealth Youth Games on Wednesday, Nigeria amassed 6 gold, 1 silver and 3 bronze medals. South Africa won 5 gold, 1 silver and 3 bronze medals. Kenya has 4 golds and 3 silver medals. Botswana has 2 gold medals. Ghana has 1 gold medal. And Uganda bagged 2 silver and 2 bronze medals. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Thursday, September 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, saying, have a very good day, Africa.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed, voanews.com.